In the 131st Block Talks, we speak with Artiona Bogle, Head of Sales Engineering at Figment, who tells us about the role of staking in the crypto economy. I'm your host, Mauricio Magaldi, and this is Block Drops, your weekly digest on blockchain for business.
These news are not a form of endorsement, sponsorship, or encouragement for consumption, and are meant for educational purposes only.
All right, everybody, I'm here with Artiona Bogle, who's going to tell us who she is and what she does with blockchain. Artiona, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Likewise, it's great to be here. A little bit of background. I've been working full-time in the space since early 2017, during what could be termed as the blockchain, not crypto era. During this time, my focus was primarily on permission blockchains, such as Hyperledger Fabric, Corda, Quorum. And yeah, while not as dynamic as my current endeavors, this period actually afforded me with valuable insights into blockchain applications across various industries. And in hindsight, it was also a period where tokenization concepts were emerging, which is once again gaining traction in the industry. I later transitioned to working as a dedicated customer engineer at Google Cloud for a bunch of protocol teams, to then lastly land here at Figment, leading its sales engineering practice globally. Figment, for those who may not know, is the world's leading provider of blockchain infrastructure and non-custodial protocol staking. In particular, we're a leader for Ethereum staking. We operate circa 40,000 ETH validators, which at current prices means roughly 4.3 billion of ETH staked with Figment. And aside from ETH, we support staking for 40 plus established and emerging protocols. And yeah, I think that looking at the various cycles we've been going through, I actually have to say that staking and working in this industry has somewhat amortized the noise, if you will, because I've experienced staking to be a pretty steadily growing business. We have many more funds, many more foundations, asset managers, exchanges, custodians staking with us today. And generally speaking, there seems to be a broader understanding of what staking is about than compared to, say, 2 or 3 years ago.
Great. But you didn't start in this industry. Can you tell us a little bit more about how did you end up working first at Enterprise Blockchain? What clicked for you to go and, you know, I want to work on this thing?
I did not have any of those epiphanies, right? Or I actually have to say that I did not bump into the Bitcoin white paper. I was a fresh graduate from my master's studies in computer science. And had just started working at Hewlett Packard. At that time, it was the time where we were trying to migrate on-prem systems to Docker containers, to the cloud. So it was equally exciting, but it felt that I had enough of that and I was looking for new exciting opportunities. And I was also looking to move to Berlin. And when I moved to Berlin, I unavoidably got infatuated with, you know, the blockchain spirit that was very particular throughout the meetups at the time, 2017, the space was buzzing. And also found out that SAP had started their innovation center in close by in Potsdam, and they were on the lookout to actually build their blockchain team. So I had heard of blockchain, of course. I knew that it was this cool, new emerging technology that would represent new paradigms for data sharing and for data ownership. And I jumped right into it. So I usually am very, you know, receptive of these new opportunities and always on the lookout to do the next cool things. And yeah, I think that was the point in time where I actually got my feet into it, and I have never, ever regretted doing so. And I actually cannot imagine doing anything else than being strongly affiliated with the space and working hands-on in the space like I've been doing the past 7 years, 7+ years now.
That's awesome. You're a ICO era OG, as we call it.
Yes, precisely. Yes, that's right.
Interesting. And in breaking into this market, I mean, most people that listen to the show are obviously aware of blockchain, but some of them have not taken the plunge yet, I would say. So what can you recommend for those people that, like you, were once outside of the industry looking in and are now, maybe we should, maybe this is here to stay. Maybe we should take this thing seriously. What is the route that you would recommend for some of these folks to start exploring and breaking into the industry?
It really depends on the profile of person and also what they do, what they enjoy in their day-to-day life, right? As I think it would be much easier for me to appeal to, for example, engineering background students or tech people or maybe even people in the financial industries, which unavoidably would have heard of you know, what the promises of this new cool technology is. Nowadays, not so new anymore, has been around for a couple of years. But yeah, so people in the street that don't necessarily have any affiliation with Web3, with the space and so on. I think it's now also with the emergence of the Bitcoin ETFs and more possibilities for people to own crypto without necessarily having to get their hands dirty. What I would advise is to maybe start playing around with those options and see how that plays out for them long term. As unavoidably, you know, owning crypto is an inherent part of it all. It would be a little bit too much to ask randomly for people, you know, to dig into the concept of the tech itself. Of course, this is much easier done with people who can see what the promises are because they have suffered certain drawbacks from the existing industries where they worked on or inefficiencies and all of that. But yeah, other folks who do not necessarily now have any affiliation or no chance that they would have heard of the benefits of blockchain technology and that what it optimizes and how that takes data back to people's hands. Perhaps starting to own crypto and then seeing what the use cases, what the applications around could be is a good start.
I love that you wrapped it up with use cases because here on the show, we love use cases. I think it's the easiest way for people to comprehend the power, the potential, the actual benefits of using blockchain in a variety of industries is through the use cases. If the technology is applied and is bringing benefits, it's much, much easier for people to understand in the context of the industry where they are experienced and how blockchain can actually bring, you know, such benefits. Now, you're working on a very specific and very blockchain based infrastructure, which is staking. For our audience that might have heard staking a few times and me talking about it, what is your 2-minute explanation or 5-minute explanation of what staking is for blockchain and why it is important?
Staking is a process in which token holders can earn rewards by helping secure a blockchain network. Staking is not an investment product. It rather enables the token holders to earn rewards by delegating their tokens in order to validate transactions on the underlying blockchain, which helps ensure the security and the integrity of the network. And if I perhaps take one step back here to compare with proof of work and proof of stake, despite being frequently misnomered as consensus algorithms, are actually examples of Sybil resistance mechanisms. So a Sybil resistance mechanism like proof of work or proof of stake dictates who can participate in the consensus protocol, for example, to propose and vote on blocks. And consensus algorithms and protocols like BFT type or longest chain dictate how the participants reach consensus. So they instruct which blocks will be committed to the honest nodes, the local view of the chain, and in what order particularly, right? So proof of work is probability of proposing a block, the percentage of the total hash power, and proof of stake is the probability to propose a block, which is the percentage of the total assets which are staked. In simple terms, we can think of staking for users as that use case, which actually represents some type of passive income, with the big difference that compared to TradFi, these staking rewards are actually known where they come from, as opposed to the interest percentage you get on your deposit in a bank. You don't actually know where that interest is coming from, whether that yield is coming from. For staking, these are rewards which are generated directly from the protocol itself. because of a helpful activity that you're doing, which is actually securing the network, if that makes sense.
It certainly does. But one thing that is curious about what you said is that Stakey isn't seen as an investment or a financial product, but it does bring rewards in form of tokens of that particular chain, which act as a passive income. If I'm an individual or a company, what types of individuals and companies are interested in securing a network and getting those rewards? When you're helping Figment to take the product to market or enable staking for the 40 plus chains you guys support, what is the type of audience you've been talking to, and what are the reasons for which these people or enterprises find useful to associate their tokens to a staking mechanism? And you know, what's the type of profile and what are they looking for when they engage with Figment?
Quite a few things to unbox here, actually. The profile of users we work with, we say at Figment that we are the complete staking solution for everyone. So we work with retail users, like we work with asset managers or foundations or DAOs. And basically, the idea is that custody and staking goes like peanut butter and jelly. Like if you're custodying crypto, you have it, be that on a hot wallet, cold wallet, your proprietary custody solution, or any kind of custody, even a MetaMask from that perspective, it doesn't make sense for you to leave the tokens sitting there if you are not engaging in any DeFi activity that requires liquidity. Basically, if your tokens are sitting there, they're not being put to work. So it doesn't make any sense. You actually do have the possibility to log those tokens and start earning the staking rewards because you are participating in the network's security. Like you are actually securing the network, right? So this is the perspective of all of these token holders that actually do not seek to do anything with those tokens. They just let the tokens sit there and also decide to stake because of this extra benefits, right? So from that perspective, we work with asset managers. They invest, you know, in cryptocurrencies or they invest in protocol teams. And therefore, they also have, you know, tokens locked up that they could put to work. However, we also do work, and particularly my task is to help democratize staking access for the type of clients which are more channel clients. And here, this includes marketplaces, exchanges, or custodians like, for example, the BitGos, the Fireblocks of this world, that actually seek to provide a click-to-stake functionality to their users. Sometimes this staking functionality is either directly embedded in the UI, or it can be served to clients via APIs, so that clients can then implement their own workflow or their own UIs, whatever the requirements there are.
Yeah, staking is such a native blockchain construct that it's not exactly easy for people who aren't in the industry to grasp, one, the importance, two, the benefits, and three, the opportunity. So I think that was a great summary. Thank you for that. In terms of the current market landscape, I mean, I just came back from ETH Denver. So we're recording this early March. So it's you know, one of those events where you come out of the conference and there's this overarching feeling of positiveness. You know, everybody's bullish on multiple things at the same time. But we're just coming out of a bear. And obviously, the goal is to be as skeptic as possible as we move into a better market situation, right? When you're dealing with staking, because a bull market means more activity, there's also more opportunity for the blockchains to attract more users, more projects, more of everything. What is it that in the staking space is either an opportunity or a challenge as we ramp up into this new, what it seems to be this new bull market with the explosion of activity?
Absolutely. Where do I start? So for us, the Figments, in terms of opportunities, there's one word for now, eigenlayer. So EigenLayer represents this interesting new concept whereby Ethereum stakers can secure numerous services by using the same collateral, the same principle of 32 ETH. So this creates pool security, and this also reduces capital costs for stakers while significantly increasing trust guarantees for individual services. And it also does solve the problem of the trust network fragmentation, and it allows bootstrapping by allowing any service, regardless of composition, to access the Ethereum's pool staker security. So EigenLayer is super interesting, and we are very excited to be supporting EigenLayer and restaking through EigenLayer, because in terms of how the users do see it, let's say that with the increasing number of Ethereum validators in the network, rewards have been going down, right? So EigenLayer is a way to improve those returns by securing this multiple actively validated services. EigenLayer comes after two main important milestones that were completed in 2022 and earlier last year, namely the merge, of course, who was the cornerstone for Ethereum's move from proof of work to proof of stake, and the Chapelle upgrade that actually turned the consensus layer rewards liquid. Now we have EigenLayer. I think EigenLayer will be the theme for Ethereum this year. And in terms of challenges for us, would certainly be deciding what networks to support. We do have an excellent protocol team that does a great job in terms of selecting what other protocols will Figment support from a staking perspective, so that we can allow investors, users, you know, this marketplace, clients, these custodians, to expose staking functionality to, say, for example, Zeta Chain, for which we're live on, or Celestia, we were live since last year, upcoming Vera Chain, Aleo, and a few others, which are very, very exciting protocols with promising total value, or let's say the investment value for as much as we can tell.
Yeah, important to get a little of that straight due diligence, both in the technology side of things, but also on the actual ecosystem construct, if you will. If they're too centralized, you might, you know, not be as excited. But decentralization is one of the things that I feel play a role in the whole staking thing. One piece of news of last year was that banks in Asia started offering some form of staking for enterprise clients. So if you're a company and you have a banking account with the bank, they were offering very abstracted, if you ask me, options on staking, mostly on Ethereum, but they had other chains as well from the top 10, top 20. What do you think is the role of traditional financial services when it comes to bringing more people to secure networks? What do you think is playing out there? Because as we know, banks are looking into P&L. That's the focus, right? It's the profit and what they make of it. But having money play a role in securing the very infrastructure or money flows is a very alien concept for banks for the most part. So what do you think is the role of traditional finance in making staking popular and improving security across the board?
You can bring up the argument that you are participating in securing the network, but I do have direct feedback now that not everyone is necessarily interested in this aspect as they are in the profitability aspect, because staking represents another line of business and it can be very profitable. We're talking about, okay, for now, rewards for ETH have gone a little lower, but earlier with the merge, we had even double digits, right? Right now we are roughly between 4% and 5% of returns. And of course, yes, EigenLayer does have the, brings the promise of increased returns. But if we can think of such returns on a balance sheet of, I don't know, $1 billion or even more, you can do the multiplication yourself. And that is returns that could go to the users. Now, of course, the users do not get all of these returns, right? The bank will probably take a part of that because the bank is providing the services. And so do we as Figment, because we run the validators, right? So we have the responsibility of running this at scale. And it's actually a huge responsibility to do this in the best way possible without getting slashed, right? So that is the worst that could happen for all of those that run staking operations for ETH in particular. So the banks, they see this as another line of business with its own P&L, which is probably mostly profits, right? And at the same time, they could argue that they're offering the services to users, which is, you know, not necessarily a bad thing. I think it's actually a very good thing to have this being offered on multiple fronts, because banks eventually act as educators for the ecosystem. I would bet that someone here in Berlin that has like a Sparkasse account, for example, and has never heard of crypto would rather be more inclined to click on the button that they see on the online interface if Sparkasse actually did give them the possibility to buy and stake crypto with them rather than through other sources, especially, you know, depending on the demographic profile of these users. It can play actually a significant role to onboarding the next chunk of users to crypto, even though through staking, which is like a very obvious and simple use case, but it's a starting point.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I mean, I come from financial services myself. I think Web3 is an overly financialized version of the internet, and a bunch of authors agree with me, and I agree with them, which is a relief. That's not frequent. And I think we're seeing a lot of opportunities to actually balance interest or the so-called incentive architecture of the internet. Now that we're introducing such a powerful mechanisms as, you know, money as part of the infrastructure of the internet. So I think that's certainly a gain in where we're headed. But this doesn't seem palatable for everyone. Not everyone understands money. Most of us don't. And a technology infrastructure that runs on money is something that is far removed from most people's understanding of technology and economy. How do you feel we should approach leveling out education so we can get more people the benefit of participating in the industry?
Should I say more airdrops? I'm not entirely sure, you know, if there is, you know, any particular way that would be more successful than others. I think we should just continue doing what we're doing on multiple fronts. I think the ecosystem here is amazing, very committed at what they're doing, and, you know, finding new innovative ways to get users to play around, be that with, you know, NFTs or, you know, providing airdrops, as I mentioned earlier, for these new networks. So I think it will unavoidably come. It's just a matter of time. I cannot really stress out right now any methodology that would be more successful than others. In particular, I can just say, you know, that the total sum of actions in here seems to be pointing to the right direction. And I noticed this even like maybe perhaps like a very naive example, as I see my LinkedIn network grow. Like, there are all of these companies, the crypto, the OGs, you know, they have been, you know, despite the cycles and all of that, I think those that have survived in a way have been finding ways to grow their teams, to be more impactful, to bring more people to the space. And bringing more people to the space is also a measure of success, which I think is very impressive. If I compare the amount of people that I talk right now versus 2017, I can see the difference. It's actually, it's getting hard to keep up with all of the new acquaintances.
It is. I do the regular episodes of the show on a weekly basis. It's a digest on the recent headlines and the best use cases. I can't keep up with everything. I don't have enough time to do my day job and keep up with everything. And even if someone is keeping up with everything, they're not doing their best job, I bet. But you said something that kind of struck a chord with me. I was in Denver, as I mentioned, and although the gender balance was better than in most of the crypto bro events, it was still heavily leaning into a bro fest. And one of the things that I try to do with the show is to bring as many diversity as I can from geographies, from gender, from industries, and from all sorts of walks of life. I'm sorry to say that diversity, you know, went all the way to having scammers that I interviewed that I later found out that they were scammers. So that's diversity for you right there.
That's an interesting story to tell.
How do we broaden that? I mean, what is, in your perspective, what are the actions we need to take now so we don't look 20 years in the future and look in hindsight and say, oh, this is still a bro fest, or it's still, you know, the same OGs that, you know, whoever entered earlier accumulated more than anybody else, and we never made this more inclusive, or we didn't democratize in the way that we thought we would. What is in your mind when it comes to let's make this thing a little bit more broader for everybody to join?
I think perhaps the first thing that comes to my mind is making the space more approachable, in that, you know, it's not rocket science if you start digging into it. Like, I think, for example, if I before would have had, you know, a few doubts on what staking was, obviously I keep learning new things every day and the space is still fascinating. But after working for a little bit, perhaps it's, you know, the engineer in me that thinks that you can actually learn everything. And by making the topic more approachable, people naturally are less intimidated, you know, to get into the space. And I'm in particular thinking of, you know, the engineering students like I was many years ago, thinking about, you know, what do they do for their lives in case they don't, you know, get into the entrepreneurship side of it, which is, of course, great. But those that, for example, seek a job in a cool Web3, you know, cryptology company, how are they able to do so without being intimidated? And I think, yeah, by making the space more approachable, by providing trainings, which I think there have been a plenty, by providing education, new books, a lot of authors are doing a great job there. Even simple actions, you know, like having more diversity in panels and not agreeing to talk on, you know, a particular, you know, flavor of panel where you have only, you know, the crypto browsers, as you put it, you know, the little actions are helping in all directions make the space more approachable for everyone. So that unavoidably, you know, people start getting their feet wet and think that, you know, they can indeed contribute their perspectives, their unique way of being and so on, to making this a more inclusive space, right? So I personally have approached this topic of diversity very pragmatically. Like, I always was doing something, in my eyes, very helpful for this space. Like, either I was doing hands-on work, like initially at SAP, or I was, you know, doing business development for a bunch of use cases. So I could see the value, you know, in bringing together various industries and thinking how we can, for example, optimize a few financial services use cases or automotive use cases or you name it. Like, I did touch a lot of industries, right? So I never thought of it from this perspective, because I was already seeing myself as helpful and bringing something to the table. And I think this mere feeling of you know, providing your perspective, getting shit done, if you will. And yeah, this will get more people to be comfortable in terms of contributing and being an inherent part of the space as we know today. And hopefully we'll see, you know, that in a few years' time will be even better than what it is today, because I have to say that we've made really good progress, at least compared to my early beginnings in 2017 or so.
I'm glad to hear that. Listen, we're approaching the end of our slot. So I want to make sure that people understand how they can get, you know, in touch with you, how they can follow the things you're doing, you know, track Artiona on socials. And, you know, if there's any conferences that are coming up that you might want to invite people to, you know, how do we keep up with everything Artiona?
My DMs on X are open. Feel free to hit me up at ART_IONA. Likewise, feel free to follow Figment on socials, X, LinkedIn. We're active, sharing what we're up to and where we're going next. Thanks for listening in, and I hope this inspired token holders who are still sitting on the sideline to stake. It's just one click away.
Artiona, it was a pleasure meeting you, learning a little bit more about your journey and your current whereabouts in crypto. The doors will be always open for you and everything you do. Thank you so much. I see you next time.
It was a pleasure, Mauricio, and keep up the good work. Very much needed.
Catch us online. We're on Instagram at BlockDrops Podcast, on Twitter at BlockDrops Pod or Xerox Mauricio. We're on Lens at blockdrops.lens. We have a newsletter on LinkedIn. Write to us at blockdropspodcast@gmail.com. And you can listen to the BlockDrops Podcast at Spotify, iColab, Fabriboon Tech, and all of the other major streaming platforms. Yay! Shout out to Artiona Bogo, who took time with us to share a little bit of her journey, a little bit of the challenges and opportunities for staking and stakers in crypto. Don't forget to leave your rating on our favorite player. This is all for today. Stay rare, stay weird, LFG.